Well, good morning, church. In here, at home, we are so glad that you're with us. So John alluded to this. I have been thinking and praying a lot over the last several months about characteristics that we have that we can develop that help us keep pressing on, help us keep walking forward when there is a headwind against us, that help us keep overcoming the obstacles that are in our way, but also that help us get back up when the obstacles we try to get over knock us down. And one of those qualities, one of those characteristics that helps us with that is resilience. Resilience is the ability to keep enduring, keep overcoming obstacles, but also bounce up, get up, climb up when we've been knocked down. Proverbs 24:16 says, "The righteous may trip seven times, but they will get up again. But one disaster is enough to overthrow the wicked." Now, when Proverbs talks about the righteous there, it's not talking about people who are perfect morally or in any other way. Righteousness is not equated with perfection. Righteousness is a pursuit of a right way of living, a right path that we take. It is that pursuit that we continue to walk forward with. It is that pursuit that gets us up off the ground when we've been knocked down. And so if this was a class right now, if this was a time where we could participate, then I would throw it out to you because I think of all kinds of stories in Scripture where resilience is shown. So the whole middle act of the story of Joseph is a story of resilience. He hangs in there after he's sold into slavery by his brothers. Now, I had two older brothers. We did a lot of dastardly things to one another growing up. No one ever sold another sibling into slavery. And yet, Joseph hangs in there. He bounces back and he climbs to the top of Potiphar's house, a wealthy individual in Egypt. But that's not the end of the story. He gets knocked down again because he gets accused of something he doesn't go, goes to prison for years, but he's resilient. And he eventually bounces back up to become the right-hand man of Pharaoh. Or I think of the story of Hannah, the mother of Samuel, or the eventual mother of Samuel, who shows great resilience in holding on to her hope and holding on to her prayer for a child. And there are endless comeback stories in Scripture. So David has to come back from military defeat. David has to come back from moral defeat. Almost all of the apostles have to have a comeback story because by the time we make it to the cross, it's only some faithful women who are left and John. All the men scatter. And to pick up the story again, they have to humble themselves and receive the forgiveness of Jesus. Famously, Peter leads the way in that category. He swears up and down, "I will never abandon you. I will never turn my back on you." And he doesn't, at least once. He does it three times, denying Jesus. That could have been the end of the story, but that wasn't the end of the story. He humbles himself and he receives the restorative forgiveness of Jesus. And then there is Paul. His whole first act is one where he is dead set that he is right on how he's living until he encounters the risen Christ And he realizes how low he had stooped. And Jesus brings him back up. And then the rest of his story is a story of resilience. And all the obstacles that he faces and the ways that he has to continue to persevere in faith in the face of those obstacles. And he gives descriptions of those all throughout 2 Corinthians, famously in chapter 6 and even more in chapter 11, where he talks about imprisonment and beatings and floggings and shipwrecks, stranger danger, and even more danger from a lot of people within the church who don't like the messages that he's preaching. He faces hunger, he faces nakedness, and on and on. But I want you to listen to this description that he gives of resilience in 2 Corinthians 4. Now, he never uses that word, but the idea is dripping throughout this passage. He says, but we have this treasure. He's talking about the gospel, the purposes and plans of God living and working within him. We have this treasure in jars of clay, to show that the all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in danger, or not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may also be revealed in our mortal body. God places his life, his purposes, his plans, not just for us as individuals, but his plans that encompass all creation, that go from the beginning and will take us to the very end. And he puts this immeasurable treasure in common, fragile, earthly clay vessels. And yet, what seems breakable remains unbroken, and what seems so fragile is never left in fragments. Paul and his co-workers are resilient. They hang in there, they press on, they get knocked down, but they're not knocked out. They get up again, and in the process, they model the importance of resilience. And they modeled the source of resilience. It is the strength of God working inside them. And so I want to talk a little bit more about how we grow in resilience. But before I do, I want to tell you a story that I actually came across a little more than a year ago. And when you start to hear the details, you'll know it wasn't 2020, it was 2019, because people could actually get close to one another during this time. It's a story about Micah Herndon, who's a Marine, and decided in 2019 of April that he was going to run his very first marathon, the Boston Marathon. Now, Micah, as you'll see in a picture in a moment, is very fit, but marathons have this tendency to reach up from the pavement and grab on and trip up even the most fit runners. But Micah was in this not just to run a personal best, although that's fine. He wasn't just in this for himself. He was propelled by something deeper, by something more. And so he is determined to make it across that finish line. And when I read the story, I was inspired by the story. I decided, hey, I wonder if there's a video out there that I could find. And when I found a video, I found that not only is there a story of resilience about Micah in this news clip I'm about to show you, but it actually displays several stories of resilience. So let's watch this together.
And all day, we saw examples of the kind of determination it takes to tackle the Boston Marathon.
Well, in fact, one man crawled on his hands and knees across the finish line. We're learning tonight that he is a Marine who refused to give up. WBZ's Tiffany Chan shows us what motivated him and many more to keep pushing to the finish.
You hear so many stories of inspiration as to why some people run the Boston Marathon, and of course, the spectators who stick around to cheer the last of them on. I spoke with one former Marine from Ohio. He told me he was finishing this marathon even if he had to crawl to the finish line, and that's just what he did today. You can see the pain and grit in Micah Herndon's face as he's inching towards the finish.
I'm doing this on my own.
His legs locked out near mile 22, forcing the Afghanistan veteran to get on his hands and knees. Micah wasn't giving up, drawing inspiration from three fellow comrades who didn't survive a bombing attack overseas.
I say their last names out loud, you know, when I'm listening to my music. I just repeat. Ballard Hamer Juarez.
In that same fighting spirit, a powerful image of two uniformed soldiers carrying an exhausted runner down Boylston Street. It's the same camaraderie that brought these two together. Thomas Smith has been paralyzed three times. He walked the entire 26.2-mile route with two canes and a new friend.
Super emotional. I have to thank Carlos. We met around mile three, and he could have easily run off, but he stuck by me the whole way.
No left anybody behind. We finished together.
Spectators who braved the rain and wind were brought to tears by their story, showing that there's no limit.
I'm 73, so definitely not a limitation. I hope I'm still doing it when I'm 85.
And no obstacle they can't overcome.
The pain that I was going through is nothing compared to the pain that they went through.
And Micah says this was his first marathon he's ever participated in. He didn't get the time that he wanted, but this certainly won't be his last race. In Boston, I'm Tiffany Chan for WBZ News.
So there are so many inspiring stories in that one video. You have Micah's crawl across the finish line because he is propelled by the memory of honoring these fallen comrades, these friends of his. And then we see the image of the exhausted woman who is carried by strangers across the finish line. And then you have Thomas Smith who meets Carlos, who is also a stranger, at mile three. And Thomas has been paralyzed three times. I don't even know everything that that entails. But Carlos says, I'm not going to leave him behind. And these strangers run this race together. I don't know about you, but that kind of inspires me to want to go out and run a marathon. I'm not going to. I said kind of, so don't hold me to that. But there is something about that. There's something about that atmosphere that is so powerful. And it's not just moving. It shows little models of things we can do to grow in resilience in our life. In fact, John alluded to this earlier, but resilience is something that psychologists have studied quite a bit over the last several decades, trying to figure out what is it that propels some people to keep going while other people give up? What is it that propels some people to get up when others stay down? And I'm not going to try to cover everything that shows up in some of the literature, but I want to talk about three ways that we can grow in resilience. And one is this: we grow in resilience when we are driven by something bigger. Now, that's what we saw in the story of Herndon as he crawls across the finish line. And as he recounts the reason why he's running this race, he shows his hand. He tells about these friends, these comrades who didn't make it. And he continues to repeat their name as he's struggling because he's running in their honor. He's got something bigger that's pushing him forward. And that's what Paul talks about, and that's what Paul models over and over in his letters. He hangs in there, he presses on. Even when he is hard pressed, he says, on every side, he is not crushed. He is compelled to keep moving forward because he is compelled by something bigger. He is living for something bigger than just himself. He is living for the purposes of God that are big enough to include everything that God has made. And in the midst of the struggle, he continues to see his struggle in a new way. And he describes his struggle to other people in a new way. And that's one of the things psychologists say helps us in our resilience. It is the willingness, it is the discipline to reframe the way we look at the things that we're going through, to rewrite the narrative of our experience. So when you think about Paul's description of what he's going through, whipped and beaten and imprisoned and opposed and hard-pressed and perplexed, persecuted, struck down, he could have stopped there and that would have been true. That's a part of his story. And it could have been his entire story, but he doesn't stop there. He reframes the story. He rewrites the narrative. So he doesn't just stop with the awfulness, although the awfulness is there. But there is always an and yet, a however, a but the gospel, however, the good news, and yet God. When we can honestly face the difficulties that we encounter in our life, but we reframe the narrative. We retell the story in a different way. We don't deny the struggle. We're honest about the struggle. We just don't end the story there. And yet, however, but God, but the gospel, but this life that I've been called to. And we grow in resilience when we surround ourselves by others also trying to be resilient, which is what John talked about in his communion meditation. And isn't that the beauty of marathons, like we saw in the video? So like Carlos seeing Thomas struggling at mile 3 and saying, we're going to walk this thing together. And one of the beauty of marathons is not just the runners, but all the people, like a Hebrews 12 image, cheering on those who are still working in the race, encouraging people they don't even know to keep on going, to keep on fighting, to keep on striving in this thing. And one of the things that this time of our pandemic has taught us or reminded us is that we are created to be communal creatures. We are created for relationship. We need each other. And we've been reminded of that much more during times when we can't get together as much as we would like or as we would need. So I've tried to say this countless times through this pandemic, but I feel like I need to say it again. Whether you're in here live or you're at home, you are not alone. You are not struggling alone. You are not running this race alone. Even during times when we have to be apart, we are in this together. We are here for you in whatever struggle that you're going through. And we need you here for us. I need you here with me. I know I cannot do it on my own. We can't do church as individuals. We can't do life as individuals. Not entirely. We need each other. That's why we're made to be a body. Church has never been about a place. It has always been about a people who are joining together. When you look at Paul's letters, you see how often he asks for help. He asks for support. He asks for prayers. And how often he uses we, not just me. We are hard pressed. We are under the gun. And yet God, through us, the church, continues to show his strength. And we grow in resilience when we rely on the strength of God. And sometimes the strength of God is experienced through the people around us who carry us when we cannot walk another step. And sometimes the strength of God is when we come alongside others and we help carry them when they cannot walk another step. And sometimes the strength of God is experienced through simple practices and disciplines like prayer and meditation and scripture. In fact, research confirms that people often find greater peace when they develop habits of prayer or meditation or things like scripture reading. Now, the challenge of that, I realize, is that I've had a lot of people honestly share with me that especially over the last 4-5 months, their prayer life has been really difficult. Meditation has been really difficult to maintain. And I would tell you a couple of things. One, that's okay. It's understandable. Don't beat yourself up. Our schedules are off. Our rhythms are off. People are around us more than they were at some other times. Don't beat yourself up, but also don't give up. Because the power is there not when you feel like a moment is particularly powerful, but the power is there because God is there. And the effectiveness is there because God is faithful. Whether we feel a spiritual high or low, during times when we feel close and times when we feel far away, the ultimate source of strength is in a God who always walks with us, even when our vision is obscured. And so we find resilience when we lean into that hope, even when we're struggling. In fact, JJ already alluded to this, but my favorite part of the service last week was Mildred's testimony, her sharing her story. In fact, now week in and week out, my favorite parts of our services are all the ways that we're hearing the voice of God through the scriptures of our people, through the prayers of our people, through the songs of our people. I am uplifted by all the different faces that we see, even if we can't see one another face to face. But the most powerful sermon last week was the sermon that Mildred gave through her life and through her words. And aren't those often the most powerful sermons when someone lives a faithful life and their words just walk alongside the way they've walked all along? And so she shares a story of resilience and holding on to hope regardless of what we go through. And that's what I want to encourage all of us to do as I close this morning. We don't have to have all of the answers. We don't have to have it all figured out. But as best we can, resilient people hold on to the hope. Or as Paul says, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. And so we fix our eyes, not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal.